What kind of hostility do Christians encounter? When does hostility become persecution? And how can we respond? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month is Standing Firm, A Christian Response to Hostility and Persecution. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Standing Firm is written by scientist Dr. Jesse Yao. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Standing Firm, A Christian Response to Hostility and Persecution.
Amos 5:24. But let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream.
It's not a war on women. We're helping them to become, in a more full way, what they were made to be, wives and mothers.
So he's really saying to the lawyer, if you're looking for who you've got to love perfectly, it's everyone. But you're not going to be saved that way. The law is going to beat you up and leave you in the ditch. The only way you can be saved is not to go find neighbors, but to be found by the one who has mercy.
Hi, this is Eric, and I'm a steel worker from Pittsburgh, PA. With some noise reduction headphones and the new iPhone app, I listen to Issues Etc. all day long.
Here is the article in the September edition of The Atlantic. It's titled, All Scientists Should Be Militant Atheists. Now, the title is a bit tongue-in-cheek, but near the end of the article, the author, Lawrence Krauss, says, well, if you're called one, you should wear that label proudly because, of course, we all know that fact is superior to faith, and faith is not a rational or even a reasonable or even a good reason to make any decision in life. Is this true? If someone is a thoroughgoing scientist, and science is concerned with facts, of course, does that mean that they should, if they're consistent, be an atheist or even, as Lawrence Krauss says in The Atlantic, a militant atheist? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon. It's the 16th of September. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about that recent column in The Atlantic with Pastor Charles St. Ange, author of the book, Five Things You Can Do to Appreciate Science and Love the Bible. In the first half hour of the program, a little bit later, Dr. John Warwick Montgomery joins us to continue our series on Christian apologetics. We're going to talk about the narrative of the New Testament as history as well as gospel. Then Pastor Jonathan Fisk will begin a new series with us on pop culture. Today, we're going to introduce the idea of pop culture and the television media. And then in the last half hour of the program, a fascinating conversation with Dr. Gottfried Martens, pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Berlin, Germany, one of the churches featured in a recent AP story about the Muslim refugee crisis there and the conversions in the numbers, in the hundreds, in the thousands that are taking place in Germany from Islam to Christianity. We'll be talking about his experience with the Muslim refugee crisis in Berlin in the last half hour of Issues Etc. Now, you can join us for the next 2 hours. Your questions and your comments are welcome. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. You can send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or our beloved on-demand listeners, feel free to use the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about a recent column in The Atlantic titled All Scientists Should Be Militant Atheists, Pastor Charles St. Ange. He's a regular guest. He's area facilitator for missions in Latin America for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. He holds a master's degree in science and a Master of Divinity degree, and he's just completed a Master of Theology in Science and Religion, and he's author of the book Five Things You Can Do to Appreciate Science and Love the Bible. Charles, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Oh, thanks for having me, Todd. I hope you're having a good day.
I am. You say, after having read the Atlantic article, All Scientists Should Be Militant Atheists, that the author, Lawrence Krauss, and this is how you describe it, he's privileging his presuppositions over someone else's. What do you mean by that, and why is that a problem?
Well, what he's basically doing in the article is saying, I have a set of presuppositions that allow me to make ethical decisions. I don't think they're based on a particular religion. I think they come from this mythical, magical thing that we should talk more about, capital S science. And because science is the engine that drives our economy forward, it's able to explain a great many things about how God seems to sustain the universe in a regular way, as we would put it, as they would put it, how the universe just seems to run itself, then we should use those presuppositions to make decisions about what's right, what's wrong, what sorts of laws should be passed, and not allow particular religious groups to make those decisions. Science, you can either define science really broadly or really narrowly. And I had this discussion with an atheist in Houston, Texas, on a couple of forums, where I was pointing out that science is terrible when it comes to historical matters. Things that happen in history happen once. They're not repeatable. You can't put the signing of the Declaration of Independence to an experiment. It happens once. You need history to investigate things like that. His response to me was, you're defining science too narrowly. You're thinking of it in terms of the scientific method. I'm thinking of science in terms of all those presuppositions that there is no God, there is no supernatural, there are no higher powers, there's no designer to the universe. Everything is what you see is what you get. And if you can't observe it with one of your five senses, it doesn't matter whether it happened in history or not. You're not going to believe it. And I realized that's a mistake a lot of us make, that we, especially as Christians, when we think we're talking about science, we think we're talking about a set of tools that allow us to investigate the regular running of the world. People like the person who's writing the article are talking about science as a philosophy, scientism, the idea that there is no God, there's no creator, there's no designer, there's nothing beyond what we can see with my own eyes, not what somebody else is seeing with their eyes, but what I see with my eyes. And that is a philosophical position. It's not actually science.
Okay. I want to explore that a little bit more, because you called it capital S science there. And in fact, the author of the Atlantic article even occasionally does this. He says science says, or science holds. He is expressing, he's speaking in that broader way, and he is talking about science as a worldview. But I think at the same time, he wants to assert that science has no a priori assumptions behind it. It simply takes what it sees and draws its conclusions directly from what it sees. Are there no a priori assumptions in scientism?
Well, this is the problem. He's mixing two things together, and he switches back and forth between them so seamlessly that it's hard to follow. Science itself has one basic presupposition. I'm talking small s science, the science that gets us computers and technology and what enables me to be in Montreal, Quebec, and talking to you over radios and internet all around the world. And that is the idea that there's a scientific method that can be applied to discover how things in the universe work. It's a very basic presupposition, and the presupposition is that the world is orderly. That's the basic presupposition of small s science. The world is orderly, and it can be investigated. If something happens yesterday in an experiment, I expect that under the same conditions, the same thing will happen today and tomorrow. That's the basic small s science presupposition. Now, if you talk capital S, scientism, there's a whole series of presuppositions that can't be proven within science. You have to have them from the start. You have to be a militant atheist to accept atheistic scientism. It's not the other way around. You don't start with science and then become an atheist. And so what he wants to do is say, I have this set of presuppositions. I'm going to call myself a scientist. Everybody loves science. Religion is doesn't use the scientific method, and therefore we can just reject all the presuppositions that people that have religions hold. But at the end of the day, ask any competent scientist, and I went on the internet and I just did some searches, competent scientists, either agnostic, atheist, Christian, or other religions, will simply say, science evaluates what is, but it can't tell us what ought to be. And that's where the line gets blurred. This is where the author of the article is trying to take us out of the realm of what is and into the realm of what ought to be. We know that there's a law of gravity. I know that if I take a coffee mug and I drop it, there's laws that govern the falling of that coffee mug under normal circumstances. But it doesn't tell me whether the coffee mug ought to fall that way. Should gravity exist? Science doesn't say. It doesn't know. It just knows that it exists. So, for example, in the article where the author is trying to argue that science says we should be allowed to have abortions on demand, all science can really do is say, here's what's happening in a woman's womb. But it can't tell us whether that ought to be happening, whether it ought to be protected, whether it shouldn't be protected, whether it's life, whether it's not life. Science can't even really accurately define what life is. So it really can't go off into the realm of oughts unless, like our author, you try and create a realm of presuppositions and smuggle it in into science and say, aha, my presuppositions are part of science. And that really is disingenuous.
Perhaps the most ironic phrase that I found in the Atlantic article, you noticed it as well, is where Krauss writes, because science holds that no idea is sacred, it's inevitable that it draws people away from religion. He seems to have done two things there. First, he has essentially reduced religion to a bunch of sacred ideas, so to speak. And he's asserted that what he's proposing as science has no sacred ideas. Are either of those things true?
Well, it all depends what you mean by the word sacred. But for me, if you're doing science and you hold to that basic presupposition that I mentioned, which is that the world is orderly, what happened yesterday is going to happen today, is going to happen tomorrow under the same set of circumstances, you could argue that's a very sacred presupposition. It's saying something very remarkable about the world, because there's really no reason why the world should be that way. Why shouldn't the sun not come up tomorrow? Why should gravity not fluctuate with day to day and operate differently? Why should the laws of logic not vary month by month? How can all of these things hold true? And not only hold true, but it's impossible to do science unless you simply accept that the universe is orderly. Paul Davies, who is not a Christian, very famous physicist from Australia, he teaches in England now, has said this is one of the most remarkable things about science, is that it's almost impossible to be a scientist without being a closet theist, a closet believer in some kind of God or God force that allows the universe to be orderly. And what's amazing is in the article, he doesn't even realize that the science he treasures so much at its roots assumes orderliness, assumes some kind of divinity or divine force.
So in other words, the very fact that the world is ordered and not disordered, that it is regular, which is something that science, small s, absolutely depends on. No scientist could do anything. Is a signpost screaming the presence of a person who put it into, someone put it into and keeps it in order.
If not that, then if nothing else, it certainly is irresponsible to say that a person who holds some kind of religious view, some kind of religious explanation for the orderliness, is somehow not being scientific. Because whether you believe that the orderliness can be explained or that it just exists, like Alan Guth said, you know, we just have to assume the universe is just one of those things. It's just disingenuous to say, religious people can't be scientific. Well, I think the shoe is on the other foot. You need to explain how, as an atheist, you can function in an orderly universe and simply go along with that assumption. The universe is orderly, but there's no good reason for it. It just is that way.
Pastor Charles St. Ange is our guest. We'll take a break, and when we come back on this Wednesday afternoon, we'll continue our conversation responding to a recent column in The Atlantic titled "All Scientists Should Be Militant Atheists." I just noticed there's a "should" in that title. Strictly speaking, there are no "shoulds." There are only "are"s in science. We'll be right back.
Science. Issues Etc. regular guest Craig Parton will present Christianity for the Academic and the Artist as part of the Village Lutheran Lectures on Christianity and Culture. Join us on Saturday, October 3rd, 2 p.m. at Village Lutheran Church, 9237 Clayton Road in suburban St. Louis. To learn more, go to villagelectures.com. Christianity for the Academic and the Artist, Saturday, October 3rd, 2 p.m., Village Lutheran, St. Louis.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
Lutheranism in the Public Square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Faith Lutheran Church and School in Plano, Texas preaches Christ crucified. Join us each Lord's Day to hear law and gospel preaching and to receive the Lord's Supper. Our classical preschool through grade 12 Lutheran school is second to none. The school serves home educators, too, with online classes in the high school. We are located at 1701 East Park Boulevard in Plano, Texas. Reach us by phone at 972-423-7448 or on the web at www.flsplano.org.
For 20 years, we've lifted our voices and instruments to the hymns of Stephen Starkey. Now, CPH has the first ever CD collection of Pastor Starkey's works titled, We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God. This 12-track CD includes nearly an hour of music from the most beloved Lutheran hymn writer of our time. Order now. Use promotion code URA. We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God is only $15.99. CPH.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're responding to a recent column in The Atlantic titled All Scientists Should Be Militant Atheists. Pastor Charles St. Ange is our guest. He holds a Master of Science degree, a Master of Divinity degree, and has just completed a Master of Theology in Science and Religion degree. Charles, I'm curious about the other part of that phrase that I quoted before the break, which was having to do with religion as a set of sacred ideas. And I think what's being implied there by the author, I'm pretty sure what he wants us to infer, is that these sacred ideas are baseless. They're simply held to because they're considered sacred, but there's no reason for actually believing these things. Am I fairly portraying what he's trying to get across there?
I think so. I think that's the point that he is trying to make, because he's already decided that certain moral positions that he holds are the ones everybody should hold, and certain moral positions that, in his view, certain religious people hold are wrong. So he's trying to find a basis to privilege his beliefs about morality over the religious beliefs and say, the religious people are wrong, I'm right. Now, usually if it's a bunch of religious people arguing, I mean, let's say we're arguing with a Muslim, we're going to appeal to our religious text. But one of the things, at least as Christians, we're going to do is, why should I trust Jesus's words, let's say, over those of Muhammad? And we will actually start, and maybe that's because we're in the West, we'll start arguing from the basis of evidence. Well, what things did Muhammad do that would cause him to be a trustworthy source for these sacred ideas, that would cause us to believe that he is speaking not just on his own, but for God? When we look at Jesus, we look at his miracles, we look at the feeding of the 5,000, the curing of the deaf and the mute and the blind, and at every turn, he is asked, you know, what sign are you going to do to demonstrate that you're teaching as authority? And he provides them. I sometimes joke that Christianity may be one of the only scientific religions, because we kind of ask the science question. It's like, what proof do you have for this? What's the evidence? Whereas if you're Muhammad, what evidence do you have? Well, he said that he saw some golden plates in a cave. Nobody else was there. That's really hard to justify. So again, you're right. He has sort of this idea that religious ideas are all the same and they're all equally dismissible. and that just simply isn't the case.
So he doesn't. He does not seem to have, at least honestly, examined the truth claims. We're not just talking about claims or belief claims, opinion claims. We're talking about truth claims of Christianity.
No, and I think this is a growing problem in the West. And I personally, I do trace it back to the rise of Islamic fundamentalism. More and more and more on the internet, you are seeing people that are opposed to gay marriage out of the Christian community in the United States being compared to, for example, ISIS. Whoa. there's a world of difference. There is no Christian community on earth right now that is making a practice of killing practitioners of other religion to make their point. We come at our beliefs very differently, and I think it behooves somebody to ask the question, how do we come at our, why do Christians perhaps hold some of the same moral beliefs as Islam, and yet deal with the problem so completely differently? So we don't want to register your marriage. We're not calling for people to go and execute you. There's a world of difference, and there is a reason for that. There's a religious reason for our differences. So I think it's an unfortunate happening that the atheist community is using one religion and a radical form of that religion, Islam, to kind of get rid of all religions and say, well, all religions are therefore the same. That's a really difficult case to make.
Well, I don't know if Lawrence Krauss, the author of the Atlantic story or column, I don't know if he chose his own title for that column, but it certainly is ironic that it contains a should, isn't it?
It sure is. And this is the problem with morality. This is where David Hume, famous atheist, said, you can't go from nature and look at facts and derive from those facts values. And he wrote that in his treatise on human nature. He said, you just can't get from one to the other. And yet, if you look at Sam Harris, who really is the godfather of people like Lawrence Krauss, that's exactly what he's trying to do. He's trying to say that you can look at the facts as science sees them, how cells work, the laws of physics, the laws of chemistry, and from those derive an ethic. He's trying to do that. And even most scientists have said, you're going too far. You can't derive an ought from an is. And yet all of ethics is about oughts. So what you're doing, if you're writing an article, why scientists should be militant atheists, is you're saying, you who study the facts, what is, must have an a priori conviction or a conviction from those facts of what ought to be. And he does not, and I've never really read anyone who persuasively has, made a case for how exactly you go from is's to oughts. You can, for example, look at how the brain works. You can look at brain chemistry. You can look at the emotional system. You can look at chemical reactions that happen within the brain as a result of certain moral decisions. And science can say, here are the facts. Here's what's happening in the brain as you, a human being, are making certain decisions. That still doesn't say anything about what ought to be, and it really doesn't answer the question of why those things should be happening in your brain anyway. So this is the fundamental problem, is every article like this, you should read and ask yourself, does the author make a good and persuasive case for how you get from what is to what ought to be?
I was also curious as how the author would deal with a person equally dedicated to science, ostensibly, and equally dedicated to atheism, who would come to a different moral conclusion than he did. Because if what he says is true, every person equally dedicated to both atheism and to science ought to draw exactly, because we live in an ordered universe, exactly the same moral conclusions all the time, because they're basing them, at least they say, upon facts. And facts don't change.
Right. Right. Science should simply say, I don't care what any of you religions say, here's value X. And here's what we do in situation B. And it doesn't work out that way. I think it's interesting that I assume if you're a militant atheist that you subscribe to some form of neo-Darwinistic evolution to explain how all life on Earth came to be. And neo-Darwinism is based on the very basic idea that you get a mutation in your genetic code, and that mutation survives based on whether it allows you to successfully reproduce better or not than somebody without that mutation. Everything's based on reproduction. Everything's based on the idea of being able to create a next generation of whatever species you are. Homosexuality is a dead end reproduction-wise. It can't pass on genes. It's almost an evolutionary way of saying whatever genes you carry, we don't want you to pass them on. And so I really have a hard time understanding, if you are a militant atheist, if you are committed to science, if you're committed to evolution, why you wouldn't be even more radically opposed to homosexuality than, say, any religious person would be. Because from a scientific point of view, it doesn't make any sense. It should be examined as an evolutionary dead end. And yet, it seems odd that militant atheists don't make that connection.
Finally, then, what I'm concerned is not so much about an ethic that's ostensibly based in science, but one that is based in atheism, because the systems, at least the results of atheistic ethical systems, have been historically some of the most tragic events, bloody events, in all of human history. Your thoughts there with about a minute, Pastor?
Well, not only have they been tragic, but thanks be to God, they are very short-lived. Romans chapter 2 is very clear in stating that God has given, written into people's hearts a law that points them in a general way towards what is right and what is wrong at a group level, and then an individual level. And so a system that attempts to bypass that or impose a value bypass on that just can't stand. It will continue to collapse. And you don't have to be a Christian to know that certain things are right and wrong, and right will always prevail over the course of history. Militant atheist value systems don't stand. They collapse.
Before we let you go, tell us a little bit about the mission work that's being done by the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod under your purview in Latin America.
We have just so many fantastic things going on. We have two missionaries in Puerto Rico who are working with a congregation there and looking to establish more. One of them tragically was hit by a car. He's recovering in Houston, Texas. So please pray for our missionaries. They're always in difficult straits. In Jamaica, we're building a church building, first Lutheran building ever. And we have a congregation in the Cayman Islands that is working there to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ to the people that live there and the people that move there temporarily to work.
Folks, you can find out more and you can learn how to support LCMS mission work in Latin America at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Pastor Charles St. Ange is Area Facilitator for Missions in Latin America for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. He holds a Master's of Science and a Master's of Divinity degrees. He has just completed a Master of Theology in Science and Religion, and he's author of the book, Five Things You Can Do to Appreciate Science and Love the Bible. Charles, thank you very much. Keep up the good work.
Thank you for having me.
When we come back, we're going to continue our series with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, part three of our weekly series with him on Christian apologetics. We are going to take up the subject of the New Testament as not just narrative, not just story, but history as well. Stay tuned.
Our school is committed to authentic Lutheranism, the entire Book of Concord, and indeed to authentic Lutheranism as it has continued to be confessed and practiced through the centuries right up into our own time.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie, chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We're committed then to biblical, confessional Christianity and Lutheranism, and applying it to the world of today in as effective a way as we can.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
When the Apostle Paul stated, "I have become all things to all men," was he talking about fitting in with the world? I've written an article in the latest Issues Etc. Journal titled, "All Things to All Men." You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues Etc. Journal. Just click the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. You can also read Pastor David Wan's story of failing to find Lutheran theology in several Lutheran churches, but finding it in Scripture and the Lutheran Confessions, the free online Issues Etc. Journal.
Lutheran Talk.
In Lutheranism, I come as a guilty sinner in need of hearing the forgiving words of Christ every single time I gather. Every single time.
Lutheran Music. The new Lutheran Public Radio app. Download for iPhone, Android, Windows Phone, and Kindle at issuesetc.org.